Welcome to Alchemical Dialogues, an Amber Light podcast. Join Dr. Henry Cutella and Mahadea Esther Jacobs-Kahn for their discussion on healing with sound. The information provided on this website and these podcasts is for informational purposes only. Nothing on this website and in these podcasts is intended to be a substitute for medical, health, therapeutic, diagnosis, or treatment. The opinions expressed by the guests in these podcasts are not necessarily the opinions of Amber Light International and anyone associated with this organization.
Welcome to Alchemical Dialogues. And Mahadea, thank you for coming back. It's just a pleasure to have you back again.
Thank you for having me. It's always fun to hang out with you.
It is fun. And I'm glad that we have Zoom to be able to hang out together, at least this way. Although we were just talking that we do miss being in person. At least we have this. So last time we were together, we talked about spiritual transformation. And this time we're going to focus more on sound, especially healing through sound. And for people who may be joining for the first time or listening for the first time, Mahadea Esther Jacobs-Kahn is a senior teacher, retreat guide, and healer in the universal Sufi lineage of Inayat Khan. She's also an experienced therapist and teacher of the Diamond Logos work. And she's worked with sound from a variety of perspectives. She holds a certificate in sound healing from the California Institute of Integral Studies and does much healing work with tuning forks. She's also studied voice and Indian music with Karuna Mai, played the harp, and gone deeply into the practices and teachings on sound from the Sufi master Inayat Khan and Pir Vilayat Inayat Khan. And she notes that she spends much of her time tuning her body, heart, and soul. So it's a real pleasure to really delve into this. It's just an absolutely fascinating field. So you had said when we talked that, and I can attest to this somewhat as a physician, that music and sound therapy is becoming more of a part of medical healing modalities. Although I think I wouldn't say it's mainstream yet, but it's more accepted than it used to be. But they've been integral with indigenous and spiritual healers for as long as we know.
And music is a part of most of the religious traditions of the world.
Yes, right.
There is the Catholic Mass in Judaism, there's the cantorial tradition, and in Islam and Sufism, there is both Qawwali and Sama, so that music is an integral part of what gets done, and sound has been part of all of the mystical traditions for years. It's coming into mainstream healing in a variety of ways. They're now using ultrasound to break up tumors. My dentist uses sonic healing and cleaning stuff. I recently went in for my regular dental work. And music therapy is becoming a parcel of healing plans for people with serious illness and people dying. There is a whole Thanatos music tradition where people are trained to sing with the dying. So that we're seeing it coming in a variety of ways. We know at this point that music lights up different parts of the brain and that there are not only changes of consciousness, but physical changes in the brain as we listen to music. The small bones in the ear are receptive to sound, both voice and music, and they communicate through the nerves to the brain. In some of the work that's been done, and I'm a 60 minutes person, we find that they presented a young man who was one of these musical proteges who was performing in concert halls when he was 11 years old. And in studying his brain, they find there are different parts of the brain that light up with music. So that when we sit and listen to a piece of music, something changes. My teacher, Pir Vilayat, used to talk about going through a very difficult period when he'd been in a motorcycle accident and his fiancée died. And he then listened to the Bach B minor Mass for 6 months. And that was part of his healing. When I was in my sound healing program, the Alan Turry, who is the head of the NYU Music Therapy Program, did one weekend of presentations. And he presented a video of a group of autistic people who weren't able to look at each other in the waiting room, but who could play music together and relate at that level of sound and vibration. He also played, and this is a little more controversial, a recording of a woman who was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer and told that she needed immediate surgery and refused to have it and came for music therapy. And she sang her song and her pain. And at the end, the tumor disappeared. It's not what I would recommend for healing breast cancer, but it was pretty amazing to watch.
Right, that is amazing.
And I think we're only at the beginning of learning this. For people who are interested in the science, there's a really wonderful book by Daniel Levitin called This Is Your Brain on Music. And he is a neuropsychologist who was a musician before he got the therapy training. And his interest is in the changes that happen in us through music. Now, in the traditional mystical traditions, sound has been used for thousands of years. And so we find in indigenous culture, there are sings for healing. Most of the traditions that use what we call mantra, or in the Sufi tradition, we call it wazifa, is the use of sound. And in my Sufi tradition, which was founded by an Indian musician, he saw us as musical instruments, and that the work of spiritual awakening is of tuning those instruments so that they are in harmony, so that we find our natural rhythm as one of the first lessons we learn. Doing your practices regularly on a daily basis, doing them around the same time every day in the same place so that energy builds. And if we look at ourselves as instruments, and I will use string instruments because that's what I know better. If you pluck a stringed instrument, it begins to vibrate. That vibration produces a sound. If you tighten the string that you're plucking, the sound changes. It becomes a musical note at some point. We have strings in our vocal cords. And in our teaching, Anayat Khan says that each of us has a voice that conveys something of our vibration and of one of the elements, and I'll talk of the elements in a few minutes. But we begin to vibrate when we do a sound practice, and we begin to tune ourselves to a particular dimension of the divine reality. When we tune to that vibration, we begin to tune to something of what's called the transmission that comes through a certain lineage in each spiritual mystical tradition. So that in my Sufi lineage, there is a vibration that comes that we refer to as the transmission that goes from teacher to student. And in a sense, that becomes the way in which we are tuned to that particular vibration. And as that, we begin more and more attuned to what Pythagoras called the symphony of the spheres. That music, which is the harmonizing of all of creation. And as we tune more and more to the symphony of the spheres, Anayat Khan says that that is God. We begin to become instruments that change with sound practices.
So let me interrupt you for a second, because I'm really curious about this. So what I'm hearing is that we each have, in a sense, our own vibration, our own note.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lineage, we're likely to be resonating with the notes of the other people in the lineage and our teacher, and there's a transmission. So you may get into this later. I've read but not practiced some aspects of sound healing where they're very particular about a very certain note, a very certain frequency is healing for a very certain condition, mm-hmm. as opposed to what I hear you saying, which is you have to find your own note. Everybody has a different vibration, and part of the exploration is to find it.
Everybody has a different vibration, and everybody has a note in whatever the musical chorus is that they're into. But when you join a lineage, you begin to tune to the vibration of that lineage. You begin to attune to the through the vibration to one's teacher, to a whole line of teachers that have a particular flavor, a particular vibration, so that we begin to add our notes to that. But as we do practices alone, we are attuning ourselves to a particular vibration. When we begin to work with sound together, that sound begins to entrain so that we begin to vibrate with one another. So that in a sense, we become part of a chorus that's vibrating at the same rate. And let's try it. I'm going to ask everybody to unmute. I'm going to be very simple now. Just intoning in your heart, come present in your heart in whatever way you do that. And you're going to do the ah in the heart, the vowel sound. So I'll start, and please join me. Ah. What began to happen in the group? You want to say it, Karima?
It started to merge, to sound together.
The sounds started to merge. We began to connect at a whole other level of sound. And that sound entrains so that we begin to vibrate together in much the same way that an orchestra does or that a group chanting does. And that begins to tune us spiritually to a particular vibration. Now, you mentioned, as when we do healing, that certain notes and certain chords are geared to an individual illness. When we work with tuning forks, we create a song for the particular person and the configuration of what they're going through, which is a little less specific than the aim at curing an illness, so that we look at what notes need to be there. Now, most spiritual traditions talk about the elements and the purification of the elements. We do that in our Sufi practice as well. Those of you who do Sufi practices do the purification breaths on a daily basis. And Inayat Khan and most mystical traditions say that we are composed of five elements. One contains all of them, which is ether, but that each of us has those elements flowing through our breath, our life force, sequentially. And if we listen to the voice of someone, we find that there is one element that predominates in that voice. So that while each voice has its own note, each of us sings in a particular key, we speak in a particular tone. As we do that, there is also an element. And in healing with tuning forks, the musical scale, and I'm going to talk now about the Western musical scale, corresponds to those elements. So that if you take an octave, middle C is earth, one octave higher C is ether. So that what we are doing when we create a song for someone is we're balancing the elements in their being. When we do that, we are looking to the note that is missing for them and to the element that they need more or less of. So that as we look at it, we are literally tuning them to help them open to the inner healing that all of us has. And we all have bodies that have the capacity to move into healing themselves. So that as we do this, we open and sound opens the subtle centers that are embedded in the body. So that the ah sound opens the heart. And vowel sounds have been used for thousands of years in various religious traditions and spiritual traditions to open certain spiritual centers that we know as both the Lataif from Sufism, the subtle centers that roughly form a Celtic cross on our bodies, the center of which is the heart, which is the central point for the what we call the vertical and horizontal elements of our being, the combining of that which is us on the earth and that which is us in the heavens. And those subtle centers begin to vibrate with sound. They vibrate with the breath. So that when we do the purification practices every morning, and I know I'm going all over the map with this, we are with our breath vibrating our subtle centers. When we do a sound practice, we are doing a stronger activator of our subtle centers. My teacher, Pir Vilayat, had a system whereby the A was in the heart, the U, the O was in the throat, the E was a high-pitched E in the third eye, the M is in the crown. And of course, the M sound is interesting because it's the first sound that a baby makes. And years ago, I did some energy balancing work, and the person teaching it said that babies come in with both their crown center and their first chakra open. And when we die, we leave with just our crown chakras open. So that sound itself begins to vibrate us and open those subtle centers that open us into essential states of being. And again, for those of you who are readers, we were talking about books. There is a wonderful book by a British musicologist by the name of Jocelyn Godwin. And I think it's called The Seven Magical Vowel Sounds, but it's on the history of vowel sounds as used in spiritual traditions all over the world to open those subtle centers.
Well, Joseph Rael has done a lot of work with vowel sounds in the native tradition.
Joseph has done that, and he is basically a dancer and does sun dances and those kinds of openings.
Well, he created sound chambers and was really heavily into doing that kind of work with sound.
He did a lot of that work with sound and created sound chambers. And I did a vision quest with Joseph many years ago in New Mexico. And it was, again, geared to opening.
Right.
He promised me in one night he could make me a believer who never doubted. Didn't quite work like that, but it was close.
But also in the shamanic tradition that I'm involved in, it's interesting. As the shaman is beginning to do their work, sometime a sound comes through them. And something gets transmitted in the sound. So very often, if they're shaking a rattle or if they're, you know, using the drum and going into an altered state, they often find that a melody comes to them. And I don't know if that melody is for them or for the person they're working with, probably for both. But and sometimes it's a very specific melody, or it might change from one to the next. Sometimes it's a song, sometimes it's just humming, sometimes it's whistling. it's really intriguing. And some that I've read about with that experience, they'll say, no, I wait for the sound to come. And that somehow that's informative, the sound itself.
The sound itself is informative. And when I have guided retreats for musicians, I tell them to bring their instruments. And I've had musicians who had ragas coming through at the end of the retreat. And we have some very gifted musicians in the Bay Area. And periodically, you know, I had somebody who once showed up with 10 instruments and I was overwhelmed. But I used to have retreats at place in the house. And I was, you know, had this entertainment coming through the whole house all day long.
Well, it's interesting. You made me remember my first couple of experiences with individual retreats were silent retreats, and I was told what to eat, and I couldn't have any books with me. And then I started doing retreats with a person that turned out to be my favorite retreat guide. And she said to me, now don't forget to bring your guitar. And I said, really? She said, how could you not bring your guitar? So as I kept on doing retreats with her, I brought two guitars tuned differently with a couple of drums. And I was climbing up her stairs into the attic, just loaded with these musical instruments. But I still remember her saying, how could you not bring your instruments with you? And I never had a raga come through, but I had some interesting experiences in an altered state with an instrument. So you're absolutely right. I had forgotten that.
Well, I can remember doing an individual retreat as part of a group of people on individual retreats. And I had Zuleika on one side of me.
Tell people who Zuleika is.
Zuleika is a Sufi teacher and movement and dancer who does a lot of whirling and a lot of singing. And on the other side of me was another wonderful teacher who's no longer on the planet. And at one point I was sitting in meditation and both of them were playing harmoniums and singing. And I decided I didn't need to do my practices. I could just sit there and do the retreat vicariously. But that sound awakening and music coming through happens for people on retreat just as they begin to have experiences of color, of light, and of sound, which are essentially all vibration that happens at different rates. So there are people who see colors when they do practices, but those colors have with them a vibration that's also sound for those who can hear sound. And as we open to those essential states that are basically part of who we really are, what we need for healing begins to happen. There is something where we set off a vibration when we heal that allows the healing energy in that person to come through. And my teacher, Pir Vilayat, said that when we do practices, we are tuning the person, but we are literally changing the cells of the body. So that over time, when we do sound practices, we begin to look different. We change physically. And it's an amazing thing to look at the physical changes of people over time. And for those of us who've been trekking along on this path for forever, we know that we've seen that in people over and over again. The current buzzword that we begin to see in people who are long-term meditators is they become luminous. And you can see the luminosity. For those of you who may have done or do Sufi dancing, the dances of universal peace, if I'm going to be politically correct, if you go to a circle where you didn't know anybody and you come in, there's something in the dance that has you being able to identify who the initiates in your order are, just as you go around the circle and pick up the light and pick up the luminosity, I will use the word. So there's something that opens in us that is a movement towards balance and towards health and to establishing our own rhythm in life when we do spiritual practice, that in and of itself is healing. Now, some of us make a distinction between curing and healing. At this point, curing means whatever illness the person comes with goes away. Healing may be deeper, and may be that that person needs their illness to fulfill something of their spiritual purpose. And sometimes the healing happens in death. So that something in what we look at and call healing is often different when we look at it from a spiritual perspective than the way it's looked at in the medical community, that more often than not focuses on symptoms and curing illnesses. And this is a time of year where I do my annual check-ins with people, and I've been looking at how many different people I go to check out different parts of my body. Nobody looks at the whole thing. You know, one person looks at my skin, and another person looks at my eyes, and another person looks at they all look at my blood pressure. But when we begin to talk about healing, we begin to talk about something that happens on multiple levels. And we begin to look at the fact that we are starting to tune ourselves to a higher vibration and a different way. And I think we look different. Something in our cellular structure begins to vibrate differently. And my experience in this past year and a half, as most of us have been on permanent lockdown, is that we have held something of the global transformation going on now with the pandemic very differently from many of our neighbors. People are getting tired of masks, but I'm not seeing a lot of deep depression and hopelessness in the community that I hang out in. And I know I'm getting all kinds of, you know, everybody's looking to increase their circle of therapists because there are so many people who are getting beaten down and depressed. Most of us have dealt with a lot of death in this last year. So there is something that changes in us, that changes our cellular structure, that changes our consciousness, and that literally changes our brains.
So, my dear, this is probably the allopathic physician in me. I'm sorry. But
all right, we'll forgive you. You went to medical school.
Very well. Right.
You've got to count for something.
That's right. I come and visit you, and you say, I know just what we're going to do. We're going to use tuning forks.
Mm-hmm.
Describe what you would do.
I would either sit you down or have you get on my table. I would begin to be present to what I see in you and what I feel from you. I would then probably get out my crystals, which I also use with the tuning forks. And I would begin to look at what instruments I'd begin to use. Sometimes I will do something with an ocean drum to bring about a little bit more relaxation. I tune into what elements I think are needed, and then I create a song with my tuning forks. Sometimes I will actually put the tuning fork on the body. And neurologists have used tuning forks for forever to check out the nervous system. I am told that before there were x-rays, tuning forks were used to diagnose fractures. My one experience with sound in a break was I broke my femur at one point, and a friend did a healing on me with Tibetan bowls. And I could feel everything in my body really clear by the end, except for the pain in the broken part. So that sound has been used to diagnose in that way. And as I do that, I would then begin to move my tuning forks around the person and in those various spots that I might touch the person with the vibrating tuning fork in a particular note or key.
How do you pick the note or key?
I do it mostly intuitively, based on my own perception of what notes are needed. What elements does the person need more or less of? And what is going to be used to balance those elements?
So that's what I was trying to get at a little bit earlier, because I know there are references I have on my bookshelf, I can't quote them because I haven't studied it, that would say, oh, someone comes in with liver disease. Here's the frequency they need to heal that. That's not what I'm hearing you say.
That's not what I do.
Right.
I leave the liver disease to the doctors.
Well, then why would I come to see you? So what if I came in to see you and say, my dear, you know, I have this chronic knee pain and I'm doing all of this allopathic stuff and I'm getting some relief, but is there anything you could help me with sound?
I would say, I don't know, but we could try it and see if it makes a difference.
But you would intuit what frequency might be needed.
I would intuit what frequency. I would probably scan the energy centers. I would see which centers I felt were open and which were closed down.
Right.
I would see where there was an occlusion. I would ask what in the liver was the problem. And I would then begin to balance those elements in the person's being with sound.
Right.
So that for somebody who is not grounded, I might do more with the legs and the feet and the lower triangle of the body. For somebody who's stuck, I would probably work with, I do a lot with the heart and with the chambers of the heart. It is not an exact science. It's not a medical science.
Right.
But all of our systems have sound in them. We don't hear that sound often. If you've had an echocardiogram, and I see a lot of gray heads here, so probably some of you have, you can hear your heart beating. My tuning forks teacher, John Beaulieu, did a lot of research because he's both a musician and a healer. And he did a lot, and he's a psychologist, and he did a lot of work, and a naturopath. He did a lot of work in anechoic chambers, research work. And eventually he could hear his blood circulating and his nervous system.
What kind of chamber did you say?
Anechoic. In other words, having everything locked out. John Lilly developed some of that in a Lilly tank, but it's basically shutting out all external stimulation so that all you have is what's going on in your body, in your mind, and in your heart. And we know that all of the elements have sound to them. Most of the time, don't hear the sound of the earth, but if you've ever been in an earthquake, the first thing that happens before the ground begins to shake is you hear this roar, and the earth lets you know that it's there. We all have heard the sound of water. We're lulled. If you've ever been on a tropical island and listened to the sounds of the wave as you're going to sleep, it relaxes you. So water has sound. Waterfalls have sound. I'm in fire season now. There is something about the crackling of a fire that soothes us and gives and increases our magnetism. And of course, when you hear a wildfire, it's raging and the sound roars. And we certainly hear the sound of the wind when it begins to rattle everything around us. So that is, we have elements, all of those elements in us are vibrating and making noise. But we don't hear that most of the time.
Right. So I want to switch gears a little bit, if it's okay with you, and talk a little more about music. You said you did some training with Karuna Mai in voice and Indian music.
Mm-hmm.
And you also played the harp.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of us are involved in an ongoing class on studying the mysticism of sound and music. And there's a lot of description in there about Indian music. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about your experience with Indian music and your training? And
I don't know how I got involved with Karuna Mayi, but I loved her and she loved me. I was probably her worst student because I didn't practice much. And I don't think I'm inherently a musician as one who goes into the world because I'm not much of a performer. But one of the things I learned from her is that different sounds open different chakras. And at one point I was talking to her about the different scales in Indian music and some of Vinayak Khan's teaching about some of the scales being more harmonious than others. And she taught me to put those notes of the Indian music scale in my chakras and to open to that. I was blessed at one point in a class of hers where she had a raga coming through, and it was the Piro Murshid raga that she came up with for Inayat Khan. And it came through in my lesson, and it was absolutely a gift and beautiful. She was an amazing person. She had met Gandhi as a young girl, and she sang to God. And she believed that the music could cure anything. If you came with a headache, she sang with you. But you could also see the music coming through her. She was an amazing musical instrument. And for most Indian musicians, they spend a lot of time before they perform tuning the audience and tuning themselves. And when I was doing the sound healing program at CIIS, Sylvia Nakash, who ran the program and is an Indian musician, talked about her teacher, who sometimes she would show up for a class and he would say, "I'm sorry, there are no ragas coming through today." So that there is something of tuning oneself to the music that one is going to play, where it's not coming from a written piece of music, but from inside yourself.
Part of the training of an allopathic physician is to deliver something even when you're not in tune. Mm-hmm. It's part of the training. And there's some attention paid to, probably more than back in my day when I was in training, about, especially in psychiatry, being in tune and knowing yourself. But it's always, you have to learn to sacrifice yourself for the sake of somebody else. So you might be tired, you might be out of sorts. This might be a 36-hour shift. You train, it's kind of like when you learn to run, you learn to run anaerobically. If you're going to run a long-distance race or you're going to sprint, you train your body that you can run without oxygen. But to hear you say that in that situation, at least, and I know they're different, but it's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, no ragas are coming through today." Right. I'm just trying to put myself in the position of saying, "Oh, I'm sorry, no interpretations are coming through today. Come back next week and I'll see you again." You know, I can laugh about it, but there's a difference. There's a different set, mindset or heart set that you have.
Absolutely. And doctors are having to operate from a mindset these days because the medical system is broken. And I remember seeing a cardiologist about 20 years ago, and I walked in and it was a large cardiology practice, and it was like walking into a factory. You got online, you eventually got to seeing this guy, and he wanted to know what I did, and I told him. And he looked at me and he said, "So you work with people like me who are seeing too many patients in too short a period of time and are stressed out?" I said, "Yes."
Right. Right.
And I think that all of us, and you know, I've been a therapist for more years than I want to admit to being alive, and that there are days when you're just not there in the same way as you are on other days.
Right.
Hopefully it's cumulative and you're eventually able to get yourself there. But you learn to check yourself out before you go into the room. And ultimately, if we leave 10 minutes between sessions, we are able to stop and tune ourselves before we go into a session. And in some of the work I do these days, it's that attuning that's key. And of course, I don't have the kind of practice I used to. So I leave room when I see people, both before and after. And I check in with what's me before I go into a room with somebody else. I let myself become present to myself. I let myself become present to them and to attune to them. And I try to be aware of what's being triggered in me in the course of doing the work I do. Now, that's true for me when I guide someone as well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I clear myself before I sit with somebody, because whatever practice I'm going to be giving them is going to impact their soul, is going to begin to activate something in them. And I want it modulated so that they don't become overwhelmed by what they're doing.
So we're talking about vibration.
And we are talking about somehow orchestrating something for both ourselves and for somebody else when we're working with sound. With all of this, we are working with vibration. We are working with tuning ourselves and tuning the other person.
So you had said in the beginning that sound deepens that. Sound's just another vibration, but everything vibrates.
Sound is vibration. In Anayat Khan's teaching, we start with what we call zat, stillness and silence. And that zat begins to somehow have movement. And that movement is vibration. And that vibration begins to manifest first as breath, which we call life and light. And from that breath, it becomes audible as sound. You know, if you take singing lessons, they do a lot of work with your breath, whether it's Indian singing or Western singing.
Western singing too.
I took singing lessons from Alauddin Matthew, and we worked a lot with breath. And that sound also begins to manifest then as color. The color then divides into light and dark, and from there comes matter. So that what we're looking at is that vibration, as it comes more and more into manifestation, begins to become more and more concrete. If it gets too set, then you begin to have to break up the vibration to begin to allow for that flow. And it's when we get rigid, when something gets stuck, that we begin to have what we call illness.
So I wanted to get back to the interaction between people. I have to be careful about how to say this. You know, when you go to see a healer of whatever type, there's usually a hierarchy in there. You're asking them to help you with something. But when I was training, I can't remember when this would come up. The person asking for help has a vibration. That vibration affects the person from whom they're seeking help. So one of the things that I experienced as a physician is how my patients would affect me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought about that. And so when I would be talking, it was probably with school counselors or I can't remember where this training was, but I would say there is a hierarchy. It's the physician's or the healer's responsibility to share what they know, their experience, given what you're asking. But at the same time, you have an opportunity, and I think the way I put it is, you can allow them to more easily do their work. You can play to their strength. You can sense out what's the way I can get across to this person so they could use whatever they have to really help me. And I think that's really significant. I mean, I know there were people that I had an easier time working with, and that some people would allow me to do my thing. And it was easier for things to flow. So I began to realize that even in a hierarchical situation, and this works with spiritual guides and their students and retreat guides and persons coming on retreat, it's really a very similar thing. Yes, there's a hierarchy, but it's also an opportunity or even a responsibility of the person who's asking for something to realize they're sending out a vibration. And that vibration will have an effect on the person that they're with, and the vibrations interact with each other. And so part of the training of a physician is to know their vibration. You never hear it talked about that way. You hear it talked about in terms of you have a bedside manner. You have an atmosphere. You have to know how to interact with the patient so they can hear you and tell you what you need to hear so you'll be able to help them. But that's still a very one-way street. And the more that I worked with people over time, and I do this with my own physician, I sense how the poor guy is doing. And I try to fit my vibration to allow him to do his work. And it works, you know? So it's a two-way street. Vibrations interact. It's not just one way.
Vibrations interact. And in hierarchical structures, from my perspective, what gets in the way is becoming identified, developing what we call an ego identity in the role you're playing with somebody else. If you begin to see yourself as the healer or the teacher with a capital H or capital T, you're in really big trouble, because part of your ego is invested in who you are and in what happens for the other person. And it can get lost in translation for what the other person needs.
Right.
So that when we begin to sit with another, I think it was Jung who said, when the process, it really works, both people are changed by the encounter.
Correct.
And I have found that the people I work with, whether it's as a guide or a therapist or, you know, whatever other thing I'm doing in any given moment, is that's a practice for me. And I am changed by the encounter. There are times when I'm stretched far more by some encounters than by others. I find that if I really like someone, I need to be cautious, because that's a tripping place. I do better with people I don't like. Because if you look at your likes and dislikes, in Anayat Khan's teaching, it translates into that's where your ego is. And for me, this work involves a constant working on my ego and my own being. What I find is what often will come at me is whatever my own issues are, walk in the door at any given moment.
So we're focusing on sound. We're really talking about all vibration, sound being a particularly prominent one that allows things to go deeply. Mm-hmm. But we've talked about color, but it's vibrations that very often we're not aware of. We always are vibrating. We are never not vibrating.
To be breathing is to vibrate and to be alive.
Correct. But rocks vibrate. Everything vibrates, just the different frequencies.
That's right. So
there's always vibration. And so, you know, I talk a lot about atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And that's vibration. Mm-hmm. And with training, you can sense that. And you may use sound. You may not use sound. It depends how you define sound, but everything is vibrating. So people can change their atmosphere without using an audible sound. Mm-hmm. That's still a vibration.
We do it with our breath. If you do breathing practices, your breath changes over time. The way you breathe changes over time. Correct. We used to have an old leader's manual that had a whole section on diagnosis with breath. With just sitting with someone,
right,
and seeing what you pick up.
Right. I think that's an extremely important point to make. Again, we're talking about sound, but it looks like what we're really talking about is all vibration, whatever way it comes through, with whatever sense, and whether we're even aware of it. And that can be so powerful. So I've had experiences of walking in a room and my mood changes. And my favorite example, this really does have to do with sound, and I've said this a lot to people. So I'm an amateur guitar player. And when I was starting to teach, I decided I would try to set the mood for the class by playing my guitar. And so I would have an idea in mind about what the class was going to be. And then I strum my guitar, I have a favorite chord, and it didn't sound right. And I'd look at my fingers and I'd play it again, and it's like, I know I have the chord right, but it just doesn't feel right. I learned over time, I had two choices. I either had to find another chord that sounded better for the class that I wanted to teach and the people who were there. It isn't just an abstraction. Or I actually learned how to do something to make the chord resonate better. And I could choose. I could sometimes just say, okay, this isn't going to work. I have to find the vibration that's in this room right now with these people. And that's what I have to find a chord to resonate with. And I would pick a different chant with a different chord to set the stage. But often I could get the atmosphere changed. And I know what I did. I just don't know how to explain it. And I can still do that. And interestingly enough, I can do it on Zoom.
And you did explain it. You are tuning into the vibration in the group and shifting it.
Yes.
Jim Wyatt used to start just about every session of a retreat with music. And that seems to happen in many of the Sufi things that I go to, in many of the classes. And I sometimes do it when I start a group. Depending what I'm doing, I will sometimes start with practices. And I think that what we're looking at is we are tuning ourselves with that vibration to be in line with the symphony of the spheres.
Yes, talk a little more about that.
Pythagoras believed that we lived in a singing universe and that we are all part of a universal harmony that he called the symphony of the spheres. I've heard from many people there's a point at which they can begin to hear the music of the spheres. And Anayat Khan talks about when we work with sound, we eventually begin to open to inner sounds so that we often begin to hear things. And when we open our senses, we can begin to see things. People talk about visions. We hear things. We smell things, for those of us like me who are more primitive, so that we begin to open ourselves to the inner senses and to what Anayat Khan terms the inner sounds. I wasn't prepared to talk about this. We usually don't talk about this. I remember asking Pir Vilayat about it, and he sent me a note saying it's tinnitus. He had a wonderful sense of humor. But there are times when it's not tinnitus. Right. And it periodically makes its way into popular songs. But those come from people's experience. I hear singing and there's no one there. I smell blossoms, but the trees are bare. And on a spiritual path, as you begin to open, you can begin to have this experience of inner sound, inner light, and inner vibration. You begin to know when your nervous system tights up and your whole vibration starts to happen differently. As I've gotten older, I find I need more alone time and more inner time, and that my vibration has slowed. I don't rush anymore. And I seem to need my whole morning to slowly move into my day. And I think part of that is just my old ladyhood. But some of that has to do with my own vibration has slowed. And that's been an intense, long process because I grew up in New York where everybody had to be fast.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the place of finding your own rhythm and having the privilege, and it is a privilege, of being able to set my own schedule and my own way of being and finding my own natural rhythm. And for each of us, we have our own natural rhythm that sometimes coincides with the way the world works and sometimes doesn't, which creates difficulties.
I think finding your own natural rhythm is a process, but it's so important. And it's difficult to do in a world where you're picking up impressions and you're expected to use somebody else's rhythm or go to the rhythm of the people around you.
One of the gifts of the pandemic has been that most of us haven't left our houses or our screens. And so we come more in touch with ourselves than we've been. We're not running around to a variety of things outside.
I think one of the struggles with the pandemic is also that some people can't tolerate that. It is so hard for people to be with themselves and to adapt to find their own rhythm and to be comfortable with it. And that's one of the stresses. So yes, there's value in being together, but there's also something about being alone. And we don't train people to be alone very well.
But this has been a time that's heaven for the introverts among us. The introverts among us have been really happy campers because this is an extroverted society.
Yes.
And the extreme extroverts are having a very hard time with the shift.
Yeah. Afizal is nodding his head as you're talking about introverts, and I think he has a question. So,
when I tuned in a little bit earlier in the podcast, there was a question, or at least I made up that there was a notion about a specific note or a specific frequency being more healing or something. And there really isn't time to go into the whys and wherefores. I just want to offer that that's a completely made up notion. And if you take a quarter of in school of basic physics and music theory with a little bit of musical history, you'll find out that it's complete nonsense. And that came from the sort of the Western occult end of spiritual inquiry. It doesn't come from any ancient tradition. The concept is simply not there. In the traditional scales, ragas, and modes, it's the relationship between the notes. It's not a specific frequency in cycles per second that is the healing factor. And the tuning fork was not invented until 1711 in Great Britain. So there we are.
You raised a really important thing that we didn't get to, which is the interval between notes. And we work with ratios as we work with different tempos. And we didn't get to tempo, but thank you for raising that because the space between the notes is really important.
Correct. Well, thank you, because now I can eliminate half of one of my bookshelves. So thank you. Any last thoughts, comments, Nadia, before we need to stop?
I'd like to hear if anybody has a question or would like to add anything. I know there are several musicians on this call. Of course, how could I not have a question from Gayatri?
Greetings from the Madison Public Library. That's why I'm all suited up here. I've had this desire, this tendency to sing to trees. And I remember doing it as a child. And then when I got a little older, I kind of shut it down. But when I became a Sufi, oh, wow. I've been singing to trees, and we have a place up north on the lake where a lot of trees, and I actually have felt that they have changed. Like one of them had a scar on it was, I don't know how it got that, and I would put my hand on it and I would sing for months, you know, years, actually. And the last time I went to see the tree, the scar was gone. And maybe they all do that. I don't know. But I'm wondering about improvisation, whatever you say that. I don't sing the same song ever to the tree. I just put my hands on the tree usually and just sing notes. But it just feels so wonderful. And I feel like I'm communing. But I don't know how to define it, or I don't know. Maybe I just want to share.
But I see Bahar and Karima both nodding as you're speaking. Bahar, you want to say something?
Just that, I guess, that surfing the cosmic sound wave, which is what I call being in the flow, is delivering just what is needed in the moment. And that's exactly what you are doing so beautifully with the trees.
You are our new tree healer.
Again, I referenced it earlier in the shamanic studies that I'm doing. That's exactly what happens. They would describe it maybe a different way, but there was one exercise. It wasn't using sound, but it was connecting from your chakra, your belly chakra, to the tree. And some shamans could see the light of the connection. And so light is a vibration. You know, we're all connected, and some shamans... I guess I'm a believer in energetic shape-shifting. Physical shape-shifting is a tough one for me. You know, they document people who change their body, turning into an animal, or literally there was one story I read of turning into a tree. And when somebody, and they came back, and somebody said to him, you know, how do you do that? He said, well, we're all one. And then the person said, well, then how come I can't do it? And the shaman said, well, if you turned into a tree, how would you feel? And he'd say, I'd be afraid I couldn't come back. And he said, that's the problem, because if we're all one, what difference does it make if you're a tree or you're a person? And that's what stops you from doing it. That's pretty wild to me. But the principle behind it, yeah, you're doing it with sound, you're seeing an effect. You know, I'm not sure traditional science is going to buy that, but...
Traditional science is buying more and more of that as
well. It's coming. It's coming.
Right. It. And we used to have a Sufi practice of getting into the consciousness of a tree.
Yes, right.
And we would sit with our backs to a tree, and we would open being the tree.
That's right.
And I did a lot of that practice, and I can still get into the tree. And sometimes what we know from our educated human perspective gets in the way of what can happen. And you know it from your psychiatric training, when everybody says there's nothing can be done, this person is just the way they are and it's not going to change. And some new resident who is full of zeal begins to work with the person, and lo and behold, there is the change that nobody thought could happen. So I think that, and I'm a big sing your practices person, and singing to trees sounds wonderful.
And it's reciprocal. The tree can help you, just like an animal can help you. We all know, well, hopefully we all know.
Just like the person who comes to you for healing helps you.
Right. We're all in this together, and the vibrations, you know, the other thing is it makes a difference who you vibrate with. So, you know, why we have a community. So we're going back to where you started, Madi, about there's a vibration in the lineage. There's a vibration in the community that you're in. And there's some communities we shouldn't be in because we just don't resonate. And that's okay. And vibrations also change. As we evolve, vibrations change. So maybe one time the vibration is fitting, and then over time, the vibrations change, and then you don't resonate anymore. And then you have some choices to make. But that's vibration. It's always changing. So, you know, you referenced my idea that in the Sufi conception, you started Zat, and that stillness. And I love this. It reminds me of my Catholic background. It's a mystery. Somehow, mysteriously, totally unknown, movement comes out of stillness. So I've been studying process theology and process philosophy, and all that goes away if you assume God is a verb. There is no stillness. I mean, it's heretical. There's always movement. And that sits with me better. I mean, they're all concepts. I can't prove that or not prove that. But if we're made in the image of the divine and we're always vibrating, as above, so below, as below, so above, God's always vibrating.
But there's a place of stillness and silence.
That
one goes into.
Yeah.
Where we get lost. And there is only that place of the absolute.
Right. Which is absolute, tiny, indefinable movement. But Louise says we have to stop, and Louise is in charge. So
thank you for having me.
And well, thank you.
Louise, for keeping us all able to hear each other.
Yes. Thank you, everyone.
If you find yourself enjoying our podcasts, please do us a favor and spread the word. Tell a friend about it. Give us a review on iTunes or post it on social media. If you or someone you know would like to participate in a future podcast, please connect with us through the Contact Us page. See our events calendar page for dates to our next live podcast recordings. We'd love for you to participate and ask questions. And be sure to check out Joel Lessie's podcast, Unraveling Religion, on your favorite podcast app. Alchemical Dialogues are live and unscripted conversations recorded on Zoom, brought to you by the great folks of Amber Light International, a nonprofit organization co-founded by Henry Curtella, MD, and Kathleen Fitzpatrick, LCSW. We choose topics from our current social and cultural climate with an emphasis on humanism and spirituality.